D-Mace, Finn, Gindendonic, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service, and we are proudly presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you on a beautiful Wednesday. Willie will be here for a little bit before he heads off with the Nashville Predators. They're maiden voyage to Salt Lake City. I'm surprised that Willie Donick has a voice left after last night's wild and crazy Predators game, a 7-6 overtime win against the New York Islanders.
Well, if you're going to be bad, make it exciting.
That's exactly what I was going to say. This season has been a dud, as we all know. But don't go out with a whimper. Go out with a bang. And that's what the Predators did last night. Coming back from 6-4 down in the final minutes of regulation. Here's an interesting note for you all. Tuesday marked just the fourth time in franchise history in which the Predators erased a multi-goal deficit within the final 3 minutes of regulation and won the game. Down 6-4 on a shorthanded goal. A controversial play leading to that shorthanded goal, I'll say. But the Predators, they would not die. Steven Stamkos, Michael Bunting tie the score. Fedor Svechkov with the overtime winner. So as I said, this season has been a major disappointment, but at least they're going out highly entertaining.
It was such a nice feeling to just have some fun. You know, that was just a fun hockey game. It's been so many. Todd Richards had a great quote in our pregame interview, as he's the acting head coach, so he does the pregame interview for the FanDuel Sports. And he said, sports can be so much fun when things are going well, and also so hard when things aren't going well. And getting through those tough nights is part of it. And so it's great that they were able to experience that last night as a team, just have a happy ending like that in such an exciting game, because just – if you just dropped out of the sky and went to that game, you had to walk out of there going, man, that was a blast, unless you're an Islander fan.
Well, it was 6-4 after Scott Mayfield scored a shorthanded goal. Again, I call it a controversial play. That might be too strong, but was it Romanov high-sticked Ryan O'Reilly right after Jonathan Marchessault broke his stick on the power play? O'Reilly and Marchessault collide, springing the Islanders on this odd man rush shorthanded. And after Mayfield scored, normally I would just shut off the TV and say, well, they gave it their all. But for some reason, I stuck around last night. And I was like, I want to see how this game ends. And lo and behold, the Predators come back to win.
Well, I think you just had that vibe throughout the game that this is one of those games where you're liable to see just about anything. And just when you think it's going to go one way, it's going to go the other. But, yeah, they overlooked a high stick, a pretty blatant high stick. And, as you said, Romanov took two players out, and that led directly to the goal that made it 6-4. And so the Predators protested as long as they possibly could. They even got an unsportsmanlike penalty because they wouldn't stop yelling at the refs.
Steven Stamkos would not let it rest.
No.
Rightfully so.
Well, understandably.
It brings up something that's been talked about a lot. You have a tool in replay where if you see some evidence. Now here are the two principles. This is why it's really tough to be an official. And I sympathize because I've used this line. You can't see, or you can't call what you don't see. So if you have two officials and then two linesmen who huddled up and they said, look, the guy's nose is bleeding. Like, there was evidence. Like, O'Reilly's cut on the nose because of this high stick. His helmet got knocked off. So there was evidence that this happened. And Ryan O'Reilly's an honest player. He's not going to say that this happened when it didn't. So you have a lot of evidence sitting there. But the officials conferred, and I can only conclude that they said, look, we didn't see it. So we can't call it. But the Predators are saying, well, look, if you're not sure, you can call a 4-minute high stick. You see blood and then go to the monitor And if nothing happened, then fine. There's no penalty. No harm, no foul. But all they would have had to do is look one time, and it would have been very obvious to call a penalty there. So, at the same time, I don't know what would have been called because a goal was scored, right? So, if you get the high stick, does that wipe the goal away? I don't think so.
That's a good question.
I don't know what the rule is. That's a question for Elliot tomorrow.
I'm not sure.
It's almost like the, making a three-pointer and then going back at the break and say, well, that was
foot was on the line.
Yeah, foot was on the line. And they could do that in basketball.
You can do that. Yeah. But I don't think by rule that you could have come back and blown the play dead.
Yeah, because the point was already scored.
I don't think there's a
sort of
place for that.
Pass interference. The goaltender in the championship game that you and I talked about when it was a blatant goaltend, but then Florida comes out and make a three-pointer.
Right.
So you can't go back. Even if you go back and say, yeah, it was a goaltending, do you wipe away Florida's points?
Yeah, and they could have gone the opposite, where they could have called goaltending, then looked at it. But if you don't call goaltending, you can't go back and look at it. So these are all the little nuances. But to their credit, the Predators then got, I think, a legit call right after that. Sometimes that's when you get a technical foul. As Avery Johnson said in a game I was watching him do, he goes, you can get a little love from the officials after they tee you up, right, because they feel bad. And maybe he's right. So they end up scoring two goals to tie it up and sent it to overtime.
What I thought about at the end of last night's game was it was a little tease of what could have been this season for the Nashville Predators. Now, the Predators aren't going to score seven goals every game, but Steven Stamkos, 2 goals, 4 points. Jonathan Marchessault, 3 assists. Brady Shea, 3 assists. The top free agents signed last summer by Barry Trotz. It felt like if everything is working the way it should, this is what it could look like. And this season is lost. They've been eliminated from postseason contention for a couple of weeks now. They've really been out of it for much longer than that. But it gave you a little taste of what Predators fans would have hoped the season would have been. Steven Stamkos making a huge difference. Jonathan Marchessault making a huge difference. Brady Shea making a huge difference. So when that game ended and I looked at the score sheet, that's the first thing that came to mind for me.
Yeah, they had 10 points combined. That's the most that those three, the three big signings that happened in the first 15 minutes of free agency that everybody's talking about, that was their best combined game in terms of production by far. You know, the thing about Stamkos, I think, you know, let's put aside that the Predators at 5-on-5 have been abysmal, right? That's been the biggest problem of their game. They haven't scored enough, and they've given up way too many. Their plus minuses, they would have some contenders at the Masters this week. You know, they're under par a lot. But Stamkos, numbers wise, he's going to end the season in the ballpark of what I thought would be sufficient from him. He's got a lot of power play goals. He's been exactly what they hoped for there. And he's going to end up with, I don't know, somewhere close to 30 goals. And I think before the season, you know, that's one thing that, you know, I was trying to temper some expectations. I don't think at this stage of his career he should be expected to get 40 goals and 80 points anymore. But if he's going to be a weapon on the power play, score big goals like he did last night, to me, if you could bottle that up and take that for the next 2 or 3 seasons, I think that's realistic.
By the way, when we did our Predators questions ahead of the season, one of the questions I asked the two of you was how many goals Steven Stamkos would score. And we all said somewhere between 26 and 39. And he's at 27 with 4 games left in the season. So we all kind of predicted a drop-off in goal scoring from Steven Stamkos. 14 power play goals, as you said, Willie. We've come to expect that from Steven Stamkos. You know that no matter how old he gets, he's still going to be a threat on the power play. But coming out of last night's game, Gentry Estes wrote a column for the Tennessean with the headline, "Tumbles for Nashville Predators, Tennessee Titans more similar than you think. And this is something that we've talked a lot about over the course of the season. And Gentry writes in part, quote, "Other than the share timing, especially cruel for the city sports fans, these dueling declines for Nashville's most prominent pro franchises wouldn't seem to have much in common. Different circumstances, very different teams, very, very different sports. However, there are big picture similarities in how each got to this point. The Titans and Predators have each become examples of how bad it can get when a franchise fails to adequately draft, develop, and retain homegrown talent, and then resorts to spending extravagantly in free agency to make up for it." Gentry continues that the lavish spending in free agency for the Titans in 2024 got former Titans GM Rand Carthon fired. "Highly doubtful it'll mean the same for Predators GM Barry Trotz. But for a coach-turned-GM, there will be good lessons to take from this season. Chief among them, free agency is best for supplementing, not nourishing a roster."
Yeah, and you're spot on. Well, he's spot on. And one, we've talked about this a lot, how, you know, it just, for this moment, it seemed like this franchise, they're both on the same sort of plane. And it's not a good one. And you start to see the similarities. I know it's sort of different in the sense of, you know, drafting a guy and, you know, developing that guy, because hockey does it, they do it a different way. You go down to the minors for a while, you develop there, and they're drafting these guys so young. So it takes a few years unless you just pop right away, and we know there's only a few guys that do that. But it takes you years, you know, to actually get to a point where they're saying, okay, you're ready for the big league. Well, the NFL, it's quickly. It's, we're putting you on the field, and you're going to know, we're going to know if you can play or not. And while they're different in that respect, what he pointed out in the article, they're the same, because neither team has been able to develop, draft, develop, and retain. No way, either via trade, they traded these guys away, or they just didn't work out for the organization. But either way, both of these franchises find themselves in a position where once these both of these franchises were, you know, looked at as stocked with talent, you know, they're headed in the right direction, to almost being like, man, where is this team headed, or where is this organization headed? They went out and they did all of this, and those two things are similar, meaning free agency. They went out and did all of this, but even with that, they're still a bad team. So where do they go now?
Yeah, I agreed. I think there's a lot of good points that Gentry made in the article. Mm-hmm. The one difference that I would contest, I think, when he says, because I think the principle is very sound, that free agency should be to supplement a roster and not be your roster. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's been a lot of lessons learned over the years. Me being a New York Mets fan, I've seen that a few times with that. But you can't just buy a roster most of the time. It just doesn't work. But I would say that the Predators, at the end of last year, felt like they had a good team. I think we would all agree. Mm-hmm. They had a really good year. And I think they saw the big spending as a supplement and not, let's just remake our team and make up for stuff. So I think that is a little different than the theme of the article. But this is where I think he made the best point on the Predators anyway. Because I think that he's spot on the Titans. The Titans knew they had a black hole from three empty drafts. And they're like, well, there's only one thing we can do. Let's just spend our way and hope that we can be competitive. And it didn't work at all. The Predators, and this is a parallel with the Titans, they don't have a middle class in the roster. And he points out really, I think, with good detail, what has happened there.
Mm-hmm. So Gentry mentions that the Predators from 2016 to 2020 drafted four first-rounders, none of whom are still with the franchise. Mm-hmm. Yaroslav Askarov, Filip Tomasino, Ellie Tolvanen, and Dante Fabro. Gentry also mentioned some of the other recent, well, not so recent, draft picks that are no longer on the team, like Yakov Trenin and Tommy Novak and Alex Carrier, even Juuso Parsonen. This was what I thought was interesting. Gentry writes, quote, only one player the Predators drafted prior to 2020 was in the lineup Tuesday. That's Mark Delgado. The Islanders, in comparison, had nine of those players on the ice. But to your point, Willie.
Right. And I don't know if I would be saying that the Islanders are the model franchise that you want to be following, because they're in big trouble right now. They're a mushy middle team that's on the downside, too.
Yes.
But his point is taken.
Yes. He also writes to what you were referencing. At this moment, though, the Predators roster lacks a middle class. It's comprised of older veterans and hefty salaries in many cases, mixed with mostly unproven youngsters in need of more NHL seasoning. It'll take time for the future to come into focus, even when there are glimpses of hope in the present. And he mentions Fedor Svechkov, who scored the overtime winner last night. But that is a sound point. You've got the 30-plus, you know, the 30-year-olds and plus, you know, Philip Forsberg, Juuse Saros, yeah. Roman Josi, Steven Stamkos. You have the younger players like Fedor Svechkov, Zachary Leroux, who are getting their feet
Matthew
wet in
Wood,
the Matthew yeah. Wood, who are getting their feet wet in the NHL. But you don't have those 24, 25, 26-year-olds who have been in the league for a couple of years, who project to be the next generation of core players. That's what's missing from the Predators.
Well, the Titans still have the same thing, but it's not in respect to age. It's in respect to years, you know, years you have invested in this game. Whereas they may be top heavy because of some of these free agent moves that when it's supposed to be supplementing, they tried to build their roster with. So these guys are on the older end when it talks about years played. And then they have a few young guys. As a matter of fact, I don't even think they have young guys.
The Titans?
Yeah, the Titans. So it's like they have these older guys and then these guys in the middle that may make the team this upcoming season, may not. But they don't have a farm system in a sense where we are drafting, developing, and retaining. They didn't got to the draft phase, but they haven't been able to get to the development phase.
Right, so, like they have, there's, you know, you could throw J.C. Latham in that mix, right?
Right.
Or Peter Skoronski. You know, younger players who are still on the come up.
Right, who they hope
yes.
exactly.
are going to keep getting better and be worthy of a second contract.
Right,
That's
but they don't
they
have
need.
Those key contributors who are on that second contract.
Yes.
Right, who are in their...
Other than Jeffrey Simmons...
Jeffrey, yeah, that's
anybody
it.
Else?
I mean, I'm thinking, really. Yeah, because
very few,
because Nick Westbrook-Ikpe left. So the guys that they drafted,
that's what
yeah.
replenishes. That's what you do when you draft and develop. That's what they lack,
and that's what I said. They don't have the development part. And they draft you, but they don't develop you.
They haven't had success there. And for the Predators, if you go back, it's been a while since they really had a hit. From the draft, you mentioned all those players that they've moved on from 2016 to 2020. None of those guys are lighting up the league. Now, they're all solid NHL players, right? And they've traded some of them. And we have yet to see what's going to happen from the results of those trades in the next couple years. They do have a really young group that's rated fairly high, deeper pool. But putting it together, meshing that group with the older group is going to be the key. But I will say this about the drafts. Roman Josi, Juuse Saros, Philip Forsberg, who wasn't drafted by them, but he was traded for when he was 18, right? Those were big hits from young players. Josi and Saros were not first-round picks. Mm-hmm. They became star players, all-stars. It's been a long time since they hit on a pick of that caliber. They've drafted a lot of NHL players, but nobody that has really popped.
I think of a
in a
team,
while.
I think of a team like the Dallas Stars, because people point to the Dallas Stars as a team that has done an exceptional job of drafting. And they have players in all three of those classes, right?
Right.
They have the older group, Jamie Benn, Matt Duchene, Tyler Seguin, now Mikael Granlund, right? They have the young up-and-comers who have already established themselves, like Wyatt Johnston and Maverick Bourque and Thomas Harley. But then they have that middle class, Jason Robertson, Robe Hintz, Miro Heiskanen. The Predators are missing that middle class, that, you know, the mid-20s burgeoning stars. That's what they don't have. They have the top group and the bottom group, but they don't have the middle group, which is key to sustaining success in all sports. But we're talking about the NHL in this particular instance. David is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. David, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Really enjoy the show. I've got a quick question and comment for you. So when Barry was head coach, was he not let go because of some similar issues that were happening this season?
That's a better question for Willie. I wasn't here yet. What do you think, Willie?
Okay.
What do you say similar things? What's an example?
Like, well, obviously the record, but it seemed like some just overall performance, getting the best out of your veteran players, some issues like that.
Well, let's
Thanks
remember,
for the call, David.
He had been there for what, 15 years?
Yes.
He was there for a long time. Mm-hmm. I'll try to make it as quick as I can, but they won playoff series in 2011 and 2012. In 2013, you had the lockout, right, which shortened the season, and then they had a huge rash of injuries after Ryan Suter left, right, to be free agent. That really gutted that was a gut punch when he left. He was a core guy, and they didn't get any compensation for him. And so they had a bunch of injuries. They went south in 2013. They got the fourth pick in the draft. They traded for Philip Forsberg. And so that actually was not the worst thing that that happened, right? That they were forced to start to retool. And then the following year, I still think they had a decent team. But what happened? Pekka got a really weird injury that turned, it got infected. He got a virus or something in his, I can't remember all the terminology, but he missed 50
games. Some sort
games.
Of infection in his
it
hip,
was like
if
an
I
E. coli infection, and it was very serious. And he missed 51 games. And, of course, he was everything in his prime at that point. And so that sort of sidetracked the whole season. And they just made a change after that. So I don't know that I would really draw much of a comparison between that team and this team.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts on the Predators' wild and crazy win last night against the Islanders. The similarities between the Titans and the Predators. Which of those teams do you have more confidence in of digging out of the holes they've dug for themselves this season? 615-737-1025. Chris Mason, Predators goaltender, former Predators goaltender, I should say, and current Predators television analyst will join us coming up next. I also want to let all of you know to keep listening after Chris Mason because I have an opportunity for you to win something. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game. Want to win tickets to a Preds game? Then be listening to Robbie and Rexro tomorrow morning for Preds Pick to Click. All you have to do is guess a Preds goal score, and if they put the puck in the back of the net, you win. Be listening tomorrow morning for the Cue to Call on Robbie and Rex Road. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Chris Mason will join us in just a couple of moments. I don't know if either of you saw this, but Budweiser Canada delivered commemorative beer cans to the 28 goaltenders who never gave up a goal to Alex Ovechkin. Curtis Joseph tweeted a picture of himself holding this special beer that Budweiser spent to all the goalies who sent that Budweiser sent all the goalies who faced Alex Ovechkin but never gave up a goal to Alex Ovechkin, who of course just broke the record. Chris Mason, unfortunately, did not get a beer because Chris Mason gave up two goals to Alex Ovechkin.
Wow. So who was the only guy?
There were, I believe, 28.
So you had to play a game.
You had to play a game against Ovechkin.
It was 28 that didn't give up a goal or just one?
28. There are 28 different goaltenders who faced Alex Ovechkin who never gave up a goal. Kevin Lankinen, by the way, on that list. Kevin Lankinen.
And Ovi may still get him before it's all over.
Yes, you're
He's
right.
on the list for now. But I guess he gets the beer.
He gets the beer right now.
Yes. But like, I wonder who's played the most games. Is it a list? Who's played the most games without giving up a goal?
Well, I think it's done by shots on net. So Mike Condon, who's been a journeyman goaltender,
just around for a
long time.
He's
been getting beat down, huh?
I believe it says here, if I can read it, it's very small print. Condon has stopped 18 Alex Ovechkin shots. Never gave up a goal.
Oh, he never gave up a goal.
But we are joined.
And that's the most.
Yes, we are joined by Chris Mason.
So if you play against him enough, he's going to get you.
Chris Mason, Predators television analyst. Mace, we were just talking about the fact that Budweiser sent out commemorative beers to the 28 goalies who never scored on Alex Ovechkin. Unfortunately, you did not get one of those beers.
No, I did not. And Willie and Jacob Underwood pointed out that I gave up two, and they actually knew when they were. So, and I forgot. So
why they got to bring up old stuff, Mace?
Yeah, I know, right? It was funny though. Some of the comments by the guys that got, they all did videos and stuff. It was really well done. They did a good job there. So that was really cool. Good marketing thing.
Did you know,
Budweiser?
I'm sure you knew this, that 183 goalies have given up a goal to Alex Ovechkin. Did you know that you were the 11th different goalie? You were number 11 on this list of 183 in chronological order. Did you know that?
I did know that. Willie and Underwood told me last night, so I actually just found that out last night.
Some luminaries on this list before you.
Again, bringing up old stuff.
Cam Ward, not to be confused with the Miami quarterback. Roberto Luongo, Ed Belfour, Martin Brodeur, Martin Biron, Henrik Lundqvist, right ahead of you. Chris Osgood, right behind you.
Wow, there you go.
Some good company.
He took the league by storm.
So it wasn't just you.
Yeah. You know what's funny, though? You know, this is what I love about speaking of that kind of stuff is Olaf Kolzig, if you remember him.
Yes. Old Capitals.
Yeah, he reached out to Ovechkin, texted him and just said, hey, congratulations, you know, all these things. And he goes, and Ovechkin replied back, well, thank you so much for being a part of it. And he's like, Kolzig texted him back and said, easy, buddy. I think I only gave up one against you or something like that. He goes, yeah, but you assisted on five of my goals. And he was like, how did you even know that? You know, it's just, you know, that's the kind of, you know, importance I think all this is. Like, he knew that Kolzig assisted on five of his goals. And, you know, he's been going for this record for a long time. And it's honestly incredible in sports. As D-Mace knows, those records that stand, I think it was 31 years. Nobody thought it could ever be broken. And for him to, obviously everybody knew how good he was, but at the age he is now, 39, to still be getting the kind of production that he is, third in the league in goals, I mean, it's just incredible. And it was such a great ceremony, and Wayne Gretzky was awesome, and just such a big proponent and happy.
Did we lose Mace?
Did we lose Mace? I don't hear Mace. We'll endeavor to get Chris Mason back on the line.
And that is why, you know, when Ovi broke the record.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Chris.
Yes, you're back.
Hey, sorry, guys.
No, what I was getting ready to say was that's why, because you talked about the specialness of the whole moment and what it actually takes to break a record like that many didn't think could be broken. And inevitably, when that happens, they start comparing, you know, this record to that record. And my thing is, you know, it's hard to compare. But one thing we can say, it's hard to definitively say which one is harder than that. But what we all know is that it's hard to do.
Yeah.
And it takes longevity and it takes consistency to do what many thought could never be done. To break that record, it took him, you know, playing a lot, being dedicated to the sport, and showing up each and every night. You can't break a record like that when you show up half the time.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I see some of these sports talk shows going on, and they're like, well, what record's better? Is it Ovechkin or is it LeBron James breaking Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's record? Like, who cares? They're both, like, amazing records. I don't know why we have to always pit that. And it's impossible to do, like, sport to sport. You know, breaking those kind of records, it's just appreciate the being able to witness history, because those types of records, you know, those are once in a generation that you get to witness something like that. So it was really cool. And the specialness of it is, and now people are saying, you know, he could get to 1,000 goals, which is, you know, possible the way he's scoring now. And they're saying that record will never be broken, but who knows, maybe 31 years from now, we got some,
some guy that's created in a lab scoring 100 goals a season. He does it in 20 years. So, no, it was awesome, and it was good for the game. It's been a good year for hockey this year with the Four Nations and obviously the Ovechkin chase. And I think the best thing about that is he's on a team that's a great story as well. So it was perfect for this year.
Chris, we were talking about the Predators' win last night, a wild and wacky 7-6 overtime win against the New York Islanders. The Predators come back from 6-4 down late to tie the game. Fedor Svechkov wins the game in overtime. And I was telling Willie and Derek that when I was looking at the score sheet after the game, I noticed Steven Stamkos, 2 goals and 4 points, Jonathan Marchessault, 3 assists, Brady Shea, 3 assists. And I said it was like a little taste of what Predators fans were hoping this season would be like, those top three free agents being key contributors in big wins. I know that this season is over. It will be completely over next week. A week from today is the season finale. But to have those players, even in these moments, you know, step up and deliver, you know, what can that do for a group as a hard season comes to an end?
Well, I just think if you listen to Bruno and Richie and the players, you know, the whole point, obviously it doesn't matter in the standings. It's probably good now. They're going to, you know, be in the mix for a top pick. But for them, I think even for the players, for them to produce and to at least end the season kind of feeling good about your game, you know, obviously this whole season, I think for everybody is going to, you know, leave a bad taste in the players' mouth, especially the guys that, that you mentioned that had big expectations. And that's a good thing. But I think at least if you can finish strong, you can kind of just, you know, end the season and say, wow, what a year. You know, but you're feeling good about your game now. And then looking forward, say, that's what we can do. This is how we can play. We know we can play like this. I think this year, and D. Mason, you guys know, the mental side of it is bigger than anything, I think. And it just became such a mental hurdle for these guys to get over all the issues and the lack of chemistry at the beginning. And, you know, you'd play a couple good games and then you'd lose 5 and you couldn't score. And this is a team that, quite frankly, it's still at this point, even after the Four Nations, I'm just shocked at the lack of offense with the talent that they have. But you see those games where they're able to break out. That's what they should be able to do a lot more consistently. So I think at least if you finish strong, you could say, you go with a little bit of smiles, you got the bad taste in your mouth, and then everyone's going to have a really determined off season, because that's what happens when you don't have a good season as a team and as an individual. That off season becomes a lot more important for your preparation, because as an athlete, and especially with these guys that have won, they're going to do everything in their power to make darn sure that it doesn't happen again. So I hope they can finish, feeling good, scoring some goals, you know, and then get after it in the off season. We'll see what Barry Trotz does. He's got, you know, a lot of draft capital, a lot of cap space. See if he, you know, dips his toes into the free agent market. But it'll be, a big off season for a lot of these players to kind of get their, you know, game in order and be ready to go at the start of next season.
Chris Mason is with us. Mace, I think a lot of people who maybe watched a piece of one game or another, maybe they don't have too much of a feel for Matthew Wood just yet. You've seen him now for a couple of games. He hasn't had any points yet. He looks like he's made a few subtle plays where you say, okay, I see why he's a first-round pick. So give me your thoughts. What would you say if somebody who hasn't watched a game yet said, how does Matthew Wood look?
Well, you know, at first glance, when I just first saw him, I'm like, oh, my God, this guy is a kid. And, you know, but the thing with him is he's been young at every level that he's played. He was really young in junior, had a lot of success, went to college as a younger player, an underage. A lot of guys will wait till they're 19, 20 before they leave junior and go play. He's coming out after 3 years as a 20-year-old. He's a big guy. He's kind of a little bit slender, I would say. But he was not intimidated out there. The things that I was most impressed was with his poise with the puck, his ability to protect it down low. It's a whole different ball game when you come from junior or college and you go to the National Hockey League, the size, the speed, the efficiency of the players in the game. And he just seemed to be able to, you know, handle whatever situation, I think. And, a lot of good things. He's got a good shot. You've seen him take a couple of shots, and I've watched him in practice. He's got an NHL shot. already. It's just a matter of, you know, getting the puck, and you know, you got to play with Bunting and O'Reilly a little bit, so I would like to see him play with a little more skill, although McCarron and Cole Smith, I thought, were good because you're going to play the majority of your shifts in the offensive zone. So I really like him. You know, it's a small sample size, but I think an excellent start for him, and he's just soaking it all up, and he's only going to get better. But, good stuff. He's got some good intangibles.
Chris Mason, Predators television analyst, joining us on D-Mace Vingan and on it. Chris, great stuff as always, man. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, guys, and thanks for bringing up the Ovechkin stuff. That kind
of
hurt my
feelings. Hey, you were a part of history, my friend.
Oh, good point. No, that makes
you were a part of history. Yeah, 183 no, awesome. Goalies can say.
We need to find out if you got the win the night that he scored on you when he was a rookie in 05.
I hope y'all got
it. Oh, yeah.
Man.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's go back and find that.
I will find that during the break, and I will share it.
I can't remember the other one.
I don't remember the other one either.
Y'all don't need to remember. It didn't happen.
I will look it up.
It didn't happen.
Chris, doesn't even remember.
Chris, keep listening. I will share that with you on the other side.
Okay, thanks. And they were sick goals, by the way.
Chris Mason joining us on
Nothing
the program.
Nothing he could have done about it.
No, absolutely not. Thanks, Chris. We'll talk soon.
See you guys.
615-737-1025. I did promise a giveaway, which we will do coming up next. 615-737-1025. And let me tell you to tune into 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Nashville Sounds take on Memphis. Pregame begins at 6:20 and the first pitch is at 6:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Hey, win an exclusive Jason Aldean experience. Tune in, text in the keyword Jason, J-A-S-O-N, to 615-737-1025 and receive a link to sign up for a chance to win all-inclusive tickets to the Eurostone Club at Bridgestone Arena to see Jason Aldean, plus also a chance to win $1,000 cash. By the way, that's not the giveaway, which is coming up in just a second. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. By the way, during the break, I looked up the dates of the goals allowed by Chris Mason to Alex Ovechkin. December 7th, 2005. In a 5-2 win by the Predators against the Washington Capitals. November 14th, 2010, a 6-4 loss to the Capitals by the Atlanta Thrashers.
Nah, that don't count. That don't count.
You got to go way back.
Yeah, that don't count.
So, Mace got the win. Much like Ilya Sorokin, right, who had probably the perfect day. He will forever be the trivia question, who gave up Alex Ovechkin's record-setting goal.
And a friend of Alex Ovechkin as well.
Right. And he got the win. It was the only goal he gave up. They won 4-1. So Mace got the win against Ovechkin.
That's all that matters.
He's 1-1.
So he's 1-1.
That's all that matters.
Games that Ovechkin scored against.
Ovechkin has scored 3 goals in games started by Chris Mason, but one of them was an empty netter, so that doesn't count.
That doesn't count.
That doesn't count.
We don't even need to bring that up.
And he also, when Mace was playing for the Thrashers, at one point just absolutely just pile drove him into the goal, and May said that he was, you know, that they were probably not as sensitive to the spotter, the concussion protocols and stuff. But he said if they might have had some effect there.
He wouldn't have finished.
He
the game.
Rammed into him big time.
He saw some stars,
and that can be found on YouTube. By the way, he also had a similar motion on Hal Gill, just ran him over at one point.
And now look at them; they're the best of
it's
friends.
A tank.
Exactly.
Chucking bags wherever they go.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's all about
this will
the
be
game.
The first bag chuck in Utah.
Oh.
Coming up. This will be a, it could
so
be
is
a
this
ceremonial
gonna be a
first
is this going
to
be a special one?
I don't know. I hadn't thought about that until this moment.
But remember,
I do have
Hal
my bag
Gill,
chucker shirt packed in my bag.
Hal Gill has made a point that in Utah, the bars aren't open that late, right?
This is a very sensitive subject for Hal Gill right here. He's very concerned.
Got to make your own bar.
He's very concerned. And I don't know if we've really done our homework on, but I'll have to let you guys know tomorrow on how it plays out.
I'm just
out.
Imagining Hal Gill walking the streets of Salt Lake City trying to open locked doors. Just, open up
you guys
the bar!
Let me in! You guys open? Somebody's there. But here's the fallback plan, though. The thing is, if you could just survive a couple days at Salt Lake, the next stop, is Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff will be open late at night in Vegas. I can. There will be compensation.
This is the preparation to Vegas, huh? This is the preparation.
It's a good way.
It's a pre-party.
It's a good way.
Pre-party. Nice.
Yes. We all remember.
Detox.
We all remember pre-gaming. According to visitsaltlake.com, Bars may serve all types of alcohol from 10 a.m. until 12:59 a.m.
Oh.
Taverns may sell beer from 10 a.m. until 12:59 a.m. Restaurants can serve alcohol from 11:30 a.m. to 11:59 p.m. during weekdays and from 10:30 a.m. to 11:59 p.m. on weekends.
So he good. He good.
So I feel like there's, the, by rule, there's got to be some places that choose to stay open. They're allowed to stay open.
Nah.
Maybe Hal got some bad info.
Yeah. But that's
right, there's hope.
But that's the norm.
What you're
yes.
reading, that's hope.
The norm.
There's hope. There's hope.
That's the
okay.
law.
He
so
just
he should find a
he
place.
He can't hold. He can't have the bender to end all benders in Utah. The bars aren't open that late.
Right.
But you will need to report back with your findings once you get to Salt Lake City.
You need to tell them to chill in Salt Lake because the next stop, oh yeah,
Vegas,
Vegas, baby.
Talk about two completely different places: Salt Lake City and Las Vegas. 615-737-1025. Speaking of that number, if you are caller number 4 right now at 615-737-1025, you will win a pair of tickets. I'm sorry, not a pair of tickets, a family 4-pack of tickets to see the Nashville Sounds take on the Memphis Redbirds at First Horizon Park tomorrow. So a family 4-pack of tickets to see the Sounds play the Redbirds tomorrow at First Horizon Park to caller number 4 at 615-737-1025. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.